Lowe's knows that saving is always top of mind, especially this season. That's why we've picked some great deals for early Black Friday. Get free select DeWalt, Kobalt, or Craftsman tools when you buy a select battery or combo kit. More tools? Why not? Plus, we've got select pre-lit artificial Christmas trees starting at $59.98 because it's never too early to think Christmas. Get Black Friday prices without the crowds. Lowe's, we help. You save. While supplies last, selection varies by location.
Did you know you can save up to 70% on the best brands just by shopping at FromRebel.com? We're talking about strollers, car seats, high chairs, espresso machines, cookware, everything you need for way less. Here's how it works. Every single day, Rebel drops thousands of new products on the site for up to 70% off. It is a constant stream of endless deals from top brands like Upa Baby, Nuna, Baby Bjorn, Breville, Nespresso, KitchenAid, Le Creuset, and more. But you have to act fast because every deal is one of a kind. So if you see something you love, make sure you add to cart fast. So stop paying full price when you don't have to. Whether it's baby gear, kitchen upgrades, or a treasure for your home you didn't know you needed, Rebel has it for way less, up to 70% less. Shop from Rebel.com and save big.
Welcome back to Travoltine Presents Easy Riders, hosted by Jeff Sweeney and Stuart Elmore, covering the Experimenter. Enjoy the episode.
All right, Stuart, please repeat after me.
Now, to give you, the teacher, an idea of the amount of shock the learner will be receiving, we think it's only fair that you receive a sample shock yourself.
Okay.
Okay, just roll up your sleeve.
Life can only be understood backwards, but it must be lived forwards.
Good. Now, I'll ask you to close your eyes and just
estimate. You had a whole bit planned. I was going to do this to you, and then you just played the scene.
Okay, close. This part.
Let's hit this with the pause. All right. I was at a whole bit plan.
What was your bit? Do your bit. Sorry. I'm sorry. Yeah. I ruined that for you.
Stuart, place your hand on the button. Then repeat after me.
Yeah.
Church. Child.
Church. Child.
Button. Fuck. You.
Button. Fuck. You.
Sorry, you got that wrong. 450 volts.
What?
This week, folks, we're talking about Experimenter. We're going to do some experiments.
Yes.
Experiments.
All right.
Thank you. Last week, we promised you a retrospective episode. We were mistaken. We forgot that this movie was coming out. This movie came out timeline-wise.
Yeah, because Stranger Things is basically our cutoff.
And I thought this came out after Stranger Things season one, but I was a year off.
Yeah.
I was like, Stranger Things 2015.
You were a whole fucking year off, my dude.
I was a full ass year off.
So we're doing this before the retrospective, after you've listened to Turks and Caicos.
Yes.
A very British spy movie.
But this week we're talking about something that's a lot of fun.
Yes.
Directed by Michael Almereyda.
Yes.
He directed that Ethan Hawke Tesla movie that came out a few years ago.
Okay.
But this movie is interesting. Because it's like a real movie. Right?
Yeah, so like I did not know what this movie was about. Yeah. I mean I didn't even know like the movie we were covering until I looked up the schedule, and then I saw the schedule was the Turks and Caicos and the Experimenter.
And you're like, what the fuck is that?
I was like, okay, Turks and Caicos. And I found out what Turks and Caicos was about, even though I never really found out what it was about. And then I watched this movie. I'm like, the Experimenter. The Experimenter.
Yes.
What's that going to be about? And I thought, are we about to do like a science fiction-y horror movie like that, The Fly?
See, that's what I was envisioning this originally.
And then you find out, oh no, it's actually based off of a real, like, psychologist yeah. that's doing like experiments. Basically, have you heard of the Stanford Prison Experiment?
Yes.
A lot of people have.
Yeah.
A lot of people don't know is that that experiment was run horribly.
Yes.
That it actually provided no real data because mm-hmm. of the conditions of the experiment. But this is actually based off of a real story of a real guy who did a bunch of social psychology experiments at Yale?
Yeah. It's a movie.
Yale, yeah.
It's about the Milgram experiment.
Yeah, because it's about Stanley Milgram.
It's about Stanley Milgram, who did a sociological experiment about obedience mm-hmm. In, you know, people. Essentially questioning why people do bad things when pressured by society.
Yeah, and to give you perspective, this experiment was conducted in 1961, yeah. Well after the Nuremberg trials
yeah.
of World War II, but still in the early 60s, what happened...
The Holocaust was fresh.
It's very fresh yeah. on people's minds. And so this is definitely kind of in that vein of people would say, I would never do that.
Yeah.
I would never be a Nazi concentration camp guard.
It's why do people follow orders
right.
when they know things are bad?
Yeah.
And everyone wants to believe that they would not, but when placed in the situation, seeing like, you know, the actual sociological result.
Yeah.
But this movie is, you know, it's about that specifically, that experiment. And it's also about Stanley Milgram as a person, like being unable to ever escape that experiment.
Yes.
That is what defines a person's life, is like the one success.
I had trouble figuring out if this was going to be more biopic-like for Stanley Milgram, or if this was going to be more so like a thought experiment movie about the thought experiment mm-hmm. of this particular experiment. Cause I didn't know if this was going to be like a movie where like it's about this guy who did a bunch of experiments.
Yeah.
Cause Stanley Milgram did do a bunch of other experiments.
Yeah, and this movie goes through them, but how none of them have really an impact.
Yeah. It keeps coming back to this. The obedience trials. Yeah. Is that what they call it?
I think that's what they call it, right?
Probably.
Because what's the book that he ends up writing called?
Technically it's called The Milgram Experiment. That's what they like coined it as, but I think he called it probably something different. And then let me look at I'm looking on IMDb on Wikipedia, The Milgram Experiment. Obedience to Authority.
Yes.
An Experimental View. That is the name of his book that he wrote. So, yep. Blah, 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 blah. Willingness of study to obey. So this movie, as I said earlier, I thought this was going to be like bouncing around a few different ideas of that. There's a movie I watched a while ago that's like about the bunker experiment. Have you heard of this
No.
one? It's, I actually think it's a really fun experiment. We did it in high school English class, but it's basically everybody gets two cards and, everybody flips over the first card and it's like a job assignment thing or whatever. And what it is it's like, you might get farmer and mm-hmm. I might get musician. Somebody else might get biologist. And then there's, say it's a class of 20, 10 of you can fit and survive in this bunker.
Yeah.
You must now all deliberate on which 10 go in that bunker.
Mm-hmm.
Cause it's like the missiles are coming. It's the end
yeah.
of the world. And the whole idea is that you pick on what's going to be useful. So
yeah.
like it's typical, like the artist, the musician, the psychologist, like they're going to be
left out.
They're going to be left out of the bunker and you have all your science folks. So then you do that and you pick your 10 and then you run the experiment again, you flip over your second card. And this one deals with more social components to it.
Yeah.
So one very particular one is one might be gay.
Yeah.
And what's the issue with that? You're going to have to repopulate the earth, right?
Yeah.
And so that might be your engineer.
Yeah.
So that's like one tiny component to it, but take that of the whole experiment. There was a movie I saw. Judy Cortez from Spy Kids is in it.
Judy Cortez from Spy Kids?
Yeah. Don't ask me why I fucking know that.
It's called After the Dark. Daryl Sabara.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you for finding that movie. After the Dark. Yes, it's a movie where they basically run that experiment, although it's a little bit more trippy, and it turns into like a movie how a professor wants to sleep with one of his students. It's a weird movie, but you get the idea, right?
But this movie is so much a psychological examination of Stanley Milgram.
Yes.
And just kind of the flaws in his own psychology.
Yes.
And like what traumatized him.
Yeah.
Because so much of like the story ends up being about why would someone do the Holocaust?
Yeah.
And that generational trauma that comes from his parents being like in that sphere.
Yeah.
In Europe during the Holocaust and being Jewish.
Yeah. So to tag on what you said earlier, though, whereas I thought this was going to be a movie about like not just this experiment, but many other experiments, and just kind of be like a fun little show of experiments and the arc of what he ascertains about humanity. It really doesn't do that. It mostly just focuses on that first obedience experiment. And as you just said, Jeff, it's an inability to like kind of explore outside of that sphere. Yeah.
It's him being trying to understand himself through his experiments and failing.
Yes.
Constantly.
Now, where I sort of lost a little bit of. So where I was having issues was I felt like it was losing that thread towards the third act of the movie that it was, it tried to become more about him as a person and his flaws and his characteristics, but I didn't really feel like it tied the knot perfectly well.
Super deep into him.
Yeah. And so like that, I felt like that part was missing a little bit. There was like almost a moment where I thought if they tugged on this point a little bit more, that'd make it interesting, where he walks into the classroom and he's like, Kennedy's been shot. And they're all like, is this part of the experiment? Yeah. And it's like, no, this is real. Like I would have loved if they just really fucking honed in on that. Like,
because the character of Stanley Milgram, the real person who Peter Sarsgaard is portraying in this movie, is essentially like a kind of cold person.
And almost
seemingly emotionless.
Artisty.
Yeah.
Like the biggest critiques he got from his obedience experiment was the fact that he has to start it on the precedent of deception.
Yes.
That he has to lie to you and make you almost put you through trauma to thinking that like you're torturing somebody and you have no choice but to continue torturing that person. And I think there have been multiple papers written on like the ethics of experiments like that. And I,
because the movie takes that a step, like a layer out, and is like, he's trying to understand why he is okay torturing these people by running an experiment of thousands of other people and why they're okay torturing people. And he's trying to figure out, why am I okay with this? That's kind of his arc in this movie.
And if it had pushed it to a little bit more, I would have really liked that point. I just feel like it loses that thread a little bit.
I do think Sarsgaard is really good.
He's great. He's fucking awesome. A lot of people are great. Fucking Jim Gaffigan.
Jim Gaffigan's great in this.
He's amazing. What is Jim Gaffigan bad?
I was not expecting Jim Gaffigan in this movie.
When Jim Gaffigan bad?
Never.
Yeah.
Jim Gaffigan good.
Is there pretext
Hot
in this
pockets?
Movie?
All right.
What'd you say?
I said Hot Pockets. No. This movie really does come from Michael Almereyda, who directs the movie. He his girlfriend took a class about Stanley Milgram psychological class, and because of her like kind of being like, oh, this is what I'm learning about, and he read the book Obedience to Authority, and he really became like entranced by making this story into a movie.
Yeah.
He wanted it to be more playful than just like a straight biopic of the guy, because apparently the writing in the book and the films that Stanley Milgram had made about his experiments, they're very fourth wall breaky. So like he's constantly like talking to the camera and like the beliefs, and he wanted the movie to have the same kind of tonality as Stanley Milgram's work.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so that's what led him to pursue this movie. And then he just kind of, you know, put funding together. This movie's made for reasonably cheap, to my understanding. There's not really much budget info available online.
I was going to say, it doesn't...
It's a Sundance movie.
Yeah, and it reads like a very, like, five locations tops.
Yes. But what's really just... What separates this movie from something like The Iceman, for example, is that Almirante, who, like I said, hasn't really done much else of note in his career, does have a really strong sense of like composition and like visual storytelling in this movie.
Yes.
He's kind of the thing that really had me hooked in this movie. Like, this movie has a split diopter shot.
Mm-hmm.
You don't see those very often.
No.
And it's like, and it's a split diopter with purpose in the scene.
Oh, you said it. Yeah. I was just about to say, yeah. And it actually has purpose in it.
Yeah. And like, there's the fun ideas where it's like rear projection while they're driving of mm-hmm. black and white footage showing that they're talking about their past.
And it feels like they're almost like a lot of sets are built on a literal stage.
Yes.
Like, not like a sound stage, but like an auditorium stage.
The movie really feels like Rod Serling-esque in like Twilight Zone, where it feels like Stanley Milgram is taking you through the story of his life.
That's a very good way of putting it.
And it like makes the limited production value, where it's like, why are they just standing in front of a projected like screen of a living room? And it's like, well, that's part of the aesthetic here, is that this is the show about...
Stanley Milgram.
This is his show.
This is his like almost like a tutorial class that he's teaching you. This movie feels like...
Feels like a movie you'd watch in class.
Yeah. And so, which I think is made with purpose. And so you're absolutely right. A lot of these low budget esque features are used to its like propel the story even more forward. And that's what low budget films should be doing.
Yes.
That's how
it's how you make a lot out of a little.
It's how you make a lot of a little.
And this movie does just generally like, it has a little bit of like the Netflix look to it.
Yeah.
Which is like the post like Fincher kind of like teals and darks, limited lighting kind of vibe to it.
Low contrasty.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
But it uses it well. Like, just because it looks like Mindhunter looks great.
Yeah.
It's not like a bad knockoff of Mindhunter like so many other Netflix things.
Yeah. Have you seen the movie The Stanford Prison Experiment?
I have not.
It's okay. That's all. That's all I want to say. Crazy that that was an experiment that happened, obviously, in Stanford, because, mm-hmm. you know.
It would have, you know.
You know, but only 10 years after this experiment ran, the obedience experiment.
Mm-hmm.
I just love, in general, the little trivial stories you hear about, in this random experiment ran in 1950, it was shown that chimpanzees, like... I don't know. I'm always fascinated things like that, even though there's a lot of misinformation about the findings and the way experiments have been conducted. I don't know. This is some me.
It's interesting to understand.
It's a me personal
thing. Interesting to understand people and why we do things.
Yeah. Yeah.
Always has been, always will be.
So
it's fun to know that Jim Gaffigan was. No, I'm kidding.
Yeah. And Winona Ryder's in this movie.
Yes, Winona is in this movie.
And she is in this movie.
Yeah.
It's not like a one scene. I was almost like, she's on the poster of this movie next to Peter Sarsgaard.
Mm. She does get a little bit of the like...
The wife.
Wife of the main character syndrome.
Yes.
Where like, even where like the movie is in some way displaying like their set, like them growing further apart and back together.
Mm-hmm.
But it's so focused on him.
Yeah.
Now, it's not to discredit Winona's role in this movie, but it is just another, like, she's playing the wife of the main character.
Yeah.
Roles.
Yeah, 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 yeah. Yeah, and there are some really good scenes with her and Peter in this movie. And towards the end, like, again, it's the third act where it just, like, it loses grip on, like, what their story they're trying to tell. And so what I feel like happens is... where they're trying to push this whole Stanley Milgram is like playing the experimental role, not just in the classroom, but also in home.
Mm-hmm.
It loses that. And I wish if it had just pressed forward onto that a little bit more, like, oh man, because you have Winona Ryder in that role.
Yes.
I mean, come on. Like, that's perfect. Like,
she doesn't really get a scene to command in this movie.
She doesn't get incepted.
Yes.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's like the whole thing of Inception is they have this like mind experiment thing and you find out he did it on his wife in the third act. And like, there's no that moment in Experimenter.
Mm. Which like, if it didn't happen in real life, you wouldn't want to imply that necessarily. But like, when the final like shot of this movie is Winona fading into the real woman nowadays and being like, she never remarried and stayed in love with him for the rest of her life.
Yeah.
Which is a nice ending for a real life person, you know?
Yeah.
But it does kind of like, it brings back like, okay, so was this movie about how she's the one person who stuck with him through this all? Because I didn't really get that was the vibe
I didn't
of
get
the
that
movie.
Either. Yeah. I don't know.
Because like Winona is, she's stuck playing supporting wife for a lot of this movie.
Yeah.
Which like she's good in it, but it's just kind of like it's another one of those where it's like, what can you say about the performance? She's just playing a good supporting wife.
Well, we've mentioned this before, where it's like Winona can do a lot with a little.
Yeah.
And she's
this is
essentially
the same role as the Iceman. She's just playing like main character supportive wife.
She's at least given a little bit beefier.
She's given like some stuff to do here.
She's given some stuff to do, but it's not that much more.
Yes.
Not that much more. Do we want to just get into the plot?
I kind of think we should just get into the plot. I'm just trying to see if there's any like particularly interesting Winona stuff in this.
I mean, this is coming after, and like you said, Michael Almereyda.
Yes.
And that he had not really done much.
Yeah, he hadn't really directed much prior to this.
So, like, I mean, but I don't know. I guess you could make the case that this is a movie that has a decent cast. Like, I'm trying to think of where this is in the milestone list for Winona, because she had just done Turks and Caicos, which, as we said, she's being asked to be a part of a movie with a well-acclaimed writer. What is that for this movie? I don't really see much of like a milestone moment for her, and not to say that there has to be one, it just seems like, you know, we're kind of in that same little the letter Iceman Homefront zone with Experimenter.
I do want to quickly amend that Michael Almereyda he'd been working for quite a while, just nothing that I had recognized. Like he had movies. He did a movie called Twister of unrelation to the Bill Paxton movie. Mm. Another Girl, Another Planet, Nadia, Hamlet. He was like a real like indie art guy. Mm. Just wanted to quickly amend that, because I didn't want to imply that he wasn't a worker. Because Winona said that she had known him for her entire life, and that's why she did this movie.
Okay.
That he made movies to teach something. And that's why she liked working with him.
Hmm.
She also had family who had passed away in the Holocaust, and she wanted to use this movie to try and understand
when
that
did?
Yes.
Interesting. Yeah. So I guess great.
Yeah.
Don't really have much to say to that. So basically, story starts and we're punched right into the obedience experiments.
Yes.
Like that is the opening shot, is them bringing in subjects, conducting this experiment.
Cause it's Milgram, played by Peter Sarsgaard, another guy, and then Jim Gaffigan are the three guys running this.
Yeah. I think like Eduardo Ballerini, who plays Paul Hollander.
No, he comes into the picture later. There's like a third guy who's just like hanging out with them at the beginning. I don't know who played him or what his role was, but he's not important in the plot. So
Anton Yelchin is in this.
Anton Yelchin makes it, and John Leguizamo each have like a really small scene, which is nice. And they're both good in it.
And so, yeah, we start, they're conducting this experiment. They show this in a way of like Jim Gaffigan is one of the subjects. And then they lead Jim Gaffigan to the room. The teacher, who is the person that's going to be doing the questioning, sees the electrodes they put on Gaffigan's body and like test the shocks and all that stuff. So then they bring the teacher back into the other room. They're separated by like one-way mirror glass, essentially. And they're like, they have a microphone so they can hear you and you can hear them.
Mm-hmm.
So, but you won't be able to see each other. So then they're like, okay, answer these. Basically you give them a word and then you give them a word that's associated to it. So like blue couch, red sky, orange tree. And it's like shit like that. And then you go back from the very top and you say, all right, so the first word is blue, table, couch, sequin, TV. And you're supposed to get the right word right. And if you get it wrong, you shock them and you go up the shock, like the volts. I love how they start the experiment with, like, I'm going to give you a test shock. And they shock, and they're like, oh, ow. I'm like, how many volts do you think that was? Like, I don't know, 100? Like, that was actually 40 volts.
Yeah.
The highest that this goes is 400 volts. Mm-hmm. So you're, like, thinking, oh, fuck. That means, like, the highest shock is, like, could kill somebody, really. Mm-hmm. So then they do this experiment, and then Jim Gaffigan gets questions wrong.
Yeah.
They have to shock him.
Going up to 450 volts.
And with each and every subject, this is like a montage-y, intercut, interlaced with Peter Sarsgaard voiceover and fourth wall breaking into the camera. So like he'll fourth wall break and be like, you see the subjects, they always try to resist, but yet they continue even though. The guy that's in the office in the room with them, like the other experimenter subject guy. So the eldest teachers, as they're getting increase on the shocks, they look back at the guy and they're like, do I have to keep doing this? Like, yes, you must continue with the teaching. They're like, okay, but it sounds like he's in pain. That's part
of the experiment.
That's part of the experiment. It's like, please continue with the teaching. And that is like the crux of the experiment is who you cast as that guy mm-hmm. for your experiment. Because think about it. Like, if that was like a dweebish, not confident, very person who answered in a very like, you don't have to if you don't want to.
Yeah.
Like, then it's like, well, then I'm going to stop.
Yeah.
Like, but it's because
it's about, would you obey an authority figure?
Yeah. And that's the important part is that they put on the lab coat. I like how he says, like, we tried white, but white looked too clinical.
Yeah.
So they put a gray coat on him, which means more like scientific.
Yeah.
So it's like, he is like an authority figure, not just in the sense that he's running this experiment, but he's an authority figure that he's smarter than you.
Yes.
So you're like, you feel subservient to him in more ways than one. And the purpose of this whole experiment is that almost every single person, I think they say like 60 to 80%, mm-hmm. something like that, always go to the very last, the highest voltage.
Yeah.
And they will continue shocking them at the highest voltage amount.
Yes.
So
we follow the first guy all the way through. And at the end, like, Sarsgaard comes in the room and tells the guy, we tricked you. The shocks were all just the least painful one.
Mm-hmm.
They don't confess that Gaffigan is in on it.
Yeah.
But they're like, yeah, it was a very minor shock the whole time.
Yeah.
And like the way they have Gaffigan play is that he like starts, you know, begging for help
halfway
through. Yes. And then he goes unresponsive. And so you think like, oh, maybe I killed him. And to see how far these people would go.
Yeah. Yeah.
And like then it's just kind of in the room with them for a good while doing more experiments, right?
For a long time.
We see like a montage essentially of people doing it.
It's like the opening 15 minutes is all
I kind of thought that we were just going to, that the whole movie might be spent in this room. And I'm like, kind of a cool idea. But then he leaves the room and he's walking around the hall and there's an elephant walking behind him.
What was the elephant? Is it like a kind of a thing of like, if I try to make you think about anything but elephant, if I say don't think about elephants,
it's the fucking elephant thing.
Yeah. It's something like that, which I like that psychology use.
It's the elephant in the room.
They mentioned one experiment.
I think it's also that experiment where it's like you put something wacky in the image and you don't notice it because you're looking at. It's put the attractive woman and the gorilla in the picture together. And you don't notice the gorilla because you're looking at the woman.
Yes. I've seen that experiment too.
This movie is so fun in how it plays with like those guys in the background.
That's the thing. It's like, oh man, this movie had such good potential in that regard. I wanted to like this movie a lot, and it's not bad. Like I said, we talked about it earlier. I think I gave this like a gentleman 6.
Mm-hmm.
And you gave it like a gentleman 7.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, I think it's all right.
I think this is a very solid 7 because I like it a lot.
The performances are really good. Sarsgaard
is great.
Is great. He plays like the coldness of it. Because here's the thing with the ethical part component of it. This gets brought up in the second act of the movie that this experiment is unethical.
Yes.
That you're tricking people into thinking that they're torturing and possibly even killing somebody.
Yes.
So
How do you feel about the ethics of this experiment?
Well, so no, here's a very good segue into this. So there's a YouTube channel called Vsauce. Have you heard?
Yeah.
And he did. You remember when YouTube Red was a thing?
Yeah.
And then it went away. Well, back when all these YouTubers were thought, well, I'm going to start a paid subscription version of my channel. He did one called it's like Mind Bender or something like that. And one of the episodes of that was the trolley experiment, which is the whole bit and thing where it's like everyone knows the trolley experiment where you minefield. And so if you go, I think it's season three, moral licensing, maybe Stanford prison experiment. Yeah. So the ethics of the trolley experiment, they're like, we want to do a real life trolley experiment where we trick someone into thinking that they have control over a train switch. And that in this experiment, they see people going toward, like they see people on tracks, like construction workers. And the subject sees a train going towards them and they see there's another track with only one person.
Oh, is this the trolley problem?
That's what I'm saying. It's a trolley problem. And in this experiment, this person can hit a button and they will divert the train to hit the one person.
Yeah.
And throughout, I think each minefield experiment's like 30 minutes long, I want to say. It's like roughly 30 minutes. And like 20 minutes of it is just them discussing the ethics of it. It's just them like trying to see if, all right, trolley problem in real life. Yeah. Yeah, it's a 35-minute episode.
The trolley problem is one of the great memes of the internet now.
Yes, it is.
Have you ever seen the one where it's like cross-track drifting? You convince the trolley to go on both tracks at once for maximum kill count.
But so like here, if I can just, I'll show this to you. So this is what essentially they did. So they put a person in this room and they were like, and they made sure there was nobody around so they couldn't like call for help or whatever. And they put like a button right in front of them.
It's urgent. Okay, so he needs to go to... Okay, he's rehearsing what to do. Oh, track two. Do they not know? They should see this.
And then they did that.
Yeah.
So that what I'm obviously the audience can't see. So the guy who's in this room, you see on the TV, it's displayed four screens. One shows the train coming. One shows track on the left with more people, track on the right with one person. And then the fourth screen shows like the train's on their way. And it's like green screen CGI. It's not real. But to the person in the room, they think it's very real. And they're put in the room thinking like, okay, like just watch this bit for us real quick. There's a button that can change the tracks. And then they play the simulation like a train's coming towards the track with more people on it. And right after he flips the switch to divert the train to make sure it goes to the one person, the screen cuts to black. And they're like, test complete. Everyone is safe. And they make a point of that in the episode because they're like, we don't want to traumatize people.
Yes.
It's like that. Imagine like that trolley problem in real life. Like that would traumatize folks. So you asked me the question, what do I think about the ethics of the obedience experiment?
Mm-hmm.
I think it is at its base unethical.
Mm-hmm.
Because like the harm that you could be doing to somebody in the long term, thinking that they're torturing and may have killed somebody.
Mm.
Every like experimenter will then do this thing where then they show them that the person's fine. Yeah. They're okay. It's like, you didn't actually torture the person, but then that's usually where the study ends with their coherence afterwards. What they don't really follow up on, at least in what it seems like to me, is they don't follow up on the long-term effects of that. Because if you just get done doing that, like shocking somebody, a stranger, and you think you might have killed them.
Yeah.
And you're like, I don't want to keep doing this. Like, you must keep doing this. And in the movie, they show there's like a couple people who
leave. They said 65% of the people do it, 25% don't.
That doesn't make 100%.
Or 35%.
Okay. I was like, what? and where they just walk out. They don't continue. But if you're among the 65%, you think you've killed somebody and you're still shocking them. And then you've reached the end of the
reanimate them, bring them back to life. Right.
But like, how would you think you would feel in that position before the reveal that they're fine?
I do kind of lean towards like, you are putting it in the people's hands to keep going. And I think like, I don't know how else you do this experiment.
Well, that's the double-edged sword of it all.
I kind of think this experiment's fine. I'm like, go for it, Stanley. Fuck them up.
Well, I'm choosing my words carefully where I'm saying like, wow, I can't believe they're that close to each other without fighting. Just because I think a test might be unethical per se,
mm-hmm.
doesn't mean I think that it warrants not doing the test per se, which I know is a very slippery slope.
Yeah.
But I mean, you think about it, like almost every single social experiment, psychology test, you start on the basis of deception. You have to lie to the person and you have to like make them believe that something is not correct. One thing that this movie does touch on, which is actually one of my favorite experiments that I've heard of, is like, it's the match the line test.
Yeah.
And that's a very real thing where it's like, you're sitting in a room with five people. You're the only test subject. Yeah, the other five are actors.
Given to group pressure.
Yeah. And it's like that. I love that experiment because it is so fucking like real. Like if you're surrounded by enough people who think one thing is right, but the answer right in front of you, like you can use your own eyes and see that it's wrong. You'll still give in to social pressure. Wow. And like, what are the ethics of that? Well, you're just pressuring them like in a group social setting. You're
making them feel stupid.
You're making them feel dumb. But like, you're not making them feel like they're torturing somebody.
Yeah.
Maybe killing somebody. I think that's the thing that this experiment goes a little bit further where it's like, they make you think you might have killed somebody.
Yes.
I think that's
the little bridge too far.
That's the bridge too far, I think. If
Jim Gaffigan's having a fun time pretending.
He is having a fun time doing it. And you notice it's recorded lines.
Mm-hmm.
He's not actually like portraying pain. They just record it in advance. And they mentioned in the experiment that they play different recordings. Like there are some test runs where they never stop screaming, which means they're always alive.
Yeah.
But then I think a good majority of their experiments, like after like the third to highest voltage, they stop screaming. And mm-hmm. It's just silence. I think that's like,
That's maybe the bridge too far.
I think that's the bridge too far. Cause at that point, like you could make the case that you're tricking them into thinking you've killed them or are killing them or in the process of killing them.
In the process of active murder.
And like, of course, it's like if you walk into any room under the knowledge that this is an experiment of under Yale or Stanford University, like, of course, there's always that series of a doubt. And that's the first obstacle of any experiment is how do you get around the idea that like this is an experiment?
Mm-hmm.
I know it's not real. That was the huge thing with the Stanford prison experiment. It's like everyone involved knew it was an experiment. And even though that is the baseline for most experiments that are conducted, it's like you have to do your best to try to take away that veil.
Mm-hmm.
In the Stanford prison experiment, it was so apparent that what we're doing is an experiment that that's where like you hear the story about the student guards becoming too power hungry and abusive to the prisoners.
Yeah.
There's no repercussions for them. And they know that going into it. So yeah, I don't know. I love this shit. I love the social
science
shit.
This movie's fun.
Yeah.
That is kind of the fun of this movie is like, did this guy go too far in questioning it and like seeing the reality around him? People don't know how to trust him.
Mm-hmm.
And you want more of that with Winona to bring it back to the movies. Like you want her to be more involved in that stuff, not knowing like how much of him is he experimenting on me?
And that's that again. Like I go back to that was like a good part of the movie. I thought I was like, if they went where he walked in the classroom, like Kennedy's been shot.
Yeah.
And all the students are like, is this part of the experiment? They're like, no, this is real. It like, cause you said something earlier and you're right. It's like, if it didn't happen in real life, like, do you risk like disparaging this guy's character even further to say like, oh, he did messed up mind games on his family. And it's like, okay, but I don't even think you have to go as far as to like really hit the hammer home on that per se. Cause you could even make it sound like all you have to do is a line from Winona.
Yeah.
Where it's like, is this a test? But that doesn't happen in the movie.
Doesn't happen.
And it wouldn't, that wouldn't be a step too far where I think you're taking it away from historical accuracy, because it's, you're just throwing a line in there. It says like, is this part of the test? And, but it would, but that single line spoken by Winona delivered in her way would be, that would be crazy in the whole, that'd be a big moment in the whole movie. Cause then Peter Sarsgaard would then have to like personify the role of like, oh my God, it just made my wife feel like I was experimenting her, and how he has to cope with that. And you don't have to do very much to get to that.
Yeah.
And the and the movie doesn't get to that.
Because what the movie is more interested in is like after he does, he's done with the experiment.
How
he's
he
like,
feels about the obedience experiment after the fact.
He's basically got his result and he publishes it, and he gets a lot of blowback from the academic circles about the ethics of it.
Yeah.
While he's simultaneously trying to like become a more respected member of like psychological circles in New York.
Yeah.
And everywhere he goes, the obedience trial follows him.
Yeah.
That he becomes a assistant professor, and the whole class is like all the students are questioning like the ethics of what this guy's done.
Yeah.
And challenging him on them.
Yeah.
And so he tries to move on to like more innocuous experiments. Like there's the small world experiment, which I like a lot.
Is that, that's the letter one?
That's the one where they're trying to like, they give a bunch of random people. That's the one where they give a bunch of random people a package to mail that they have to get to someone in Massachusetts.
Yeah.
But they can't mail to them. They can only mail to people who they know.
Mm.
And on average, it takes about 6 people to get to the person. That most people are only 6 degrees away from someone else in the country.
From the world.
In the world.
Yeah.
I mean, they're specifically just doing the U.S., but
yeah, you're right.
It's more like small country.
And then they made a movie about that with Will Smith called 6 Degrees of Separation.
Yeah.
Have you seen that movie?
Yeah, and then there's 6 Degrees of Kevin Bacon.
6 Degrees of Kevin Bacon, yeah.
There's the lost letter one where it's they essentially throw 4 letters around. One address to the Communist Party, one address to the Nazi Party, one address to a random name, and I forgot what the 4th one is.
One is like, and then they switch it up and do like a black support fund or something like that, or like they do something where it's like in black communities versus white communities, and like I think they also do like the KKK or something like that. They do a lot of different variations of that. I forget like the results of that experiment though. I think it was like
they basically found that like the more, you know, innocuous people got their letter mailed to them, whereas like the Nazi Party and the Communist Party, people were more likely to throw them out.
Yeah,
which makes sense,
right?
But he keeps trying to do these like experiments. My favorite is the guy staring at the sky.
Yeah,
And other people will stop and also look at the sky,
or facing the wrong way in the elevator.
Yeah, the wrong way in the elevator one's great.
That one's really good.
There was a really funny person who did something similar to this in London once, where they just stood with intent on a corner and like 10 guys lined up behind them. Just like, but, and I mean, eventually like, the guy turned around and was like, what are you all waiting for? And they're like, oh, I thought we were just waiting. For what?
It is like social pressure as a tool,
yes,
is something that is very like, it's such a fascinating like element of human psychological sciences that I've always been really fascinated in.
Yes.
You and I both work in background with extras, and we work with like sometimes like 50 to 100 people at a time. And we have to like make scenes feel like they're regular scenes. Now, this actually happened once, and there's actually been stories about this where on TV shows or movies where there's big background scenes, mm-hmm, whether it's like regular city blocks, that random people who don't belong on the set wander in.
Yeah, and start playing along.
And then you hear cut, and all the people that were in the pit scene back up and go to their regular positions. This actually happened on a show I was working on 3 weeks ago. Remember the park block party I told you about?
Yeah.
I'll show you a video, but it was actually very funny.
That's great.
It's a very interesting tool that we have, that if you have like 10 other friends that you can coordinate to do something with all 10 of you, you can easily start the snowball effect and get more people in on it just because you've made it seem like like a group project for everybody to be involved in. It's very fascinating. And then of course you fall into like the mob effect. So yeah, he tries to continue doing more social experiments. And
he just keeps getting brought back to
the
obedience trial.
Yeah.
That's all people want to talk about. Because I think people find it so upsetting to consider that like they want to reject it and they want to fight it because they don't want to believe that about themselves.
Yeah.
Something that I thought about recently is I've been watching a lot of Stephen King adaptations recently for Halloween.
Yeah.
Because I've read a lot of his books. And I'm like, oh, I should watch the movies of the books that I've read.
Yeah.
And of course, I've seen The Shining before, but I watched The Shining. Yeah. And Stephen King notoriously hates the movie.
Yeah.
And I saw a really interesting read online, which is like the difference between the book and the movie The Shining is that in the book, Jack Torrance is inherently like a good person who's flawed, and the Overlook like preys on him and corrupts him. In the movie, Jack Torrance is bad from the start, and the Overlook is just like an enabler for him.
Yeah.
And that is the fundamental difference between the two.
Yes.
Is that Jack Torrance in the movie, even if he never goes to the Overlook,
it's still
he
kind
probably
of a,
snaps at some point.
Yeah.
I'm just not in the same way, but he snaps.
Yeah.
Jack Torrance in the book maybe is able to be okay if it's not for the Overlook.
Yeah.
And he's a stand-in for Stephen King and his struggles with alcoholism and whatnot.
Mm-hmm.
And his own problems. And I think that Stephen King doesn't want to accept the reality that like
the movie might be more accurate to
him. The movie might be more accurate to him than the book.
That maybe that's what Stanley Kubrick was trying to say.
Yeah, that's what Stanley Kubrick like honed in on.
Well, I think Stanley Kubrick was making Jack Torrance an outlet for Stanley Kubrick.
Yes.
I think that might be why crucial difference there.
And I don't think Stephen King was justifiably, understandably, didn't want to accept that maybe he is the problem and not the Overlook.
Yeah.
And I think that a lot where it's like a lot of these people who did the experiment they want to believe that they were pressured into it instead of believing that they did a bad thing themselves.
Yeah.
And that's why I think he places so much blowback because people just don't want to accept that about human nature, even though the experiment's evidence is conclusive.
Yeah. That people are inherently selfish and more self-preservation.
But he gets rejected from Harvard and he's unable to really progress past where he is.
Yeah. Right.
He keeps doing these little experiments, but nothing really astounding until he finally just decides to publish a book on the obedience experiment.
Yeah.
Because like his career past that point is not working. So he just accepts that I'm going to be known as the obedience guy.
The obedience experiment guy.
So he writes a book, publishes it, gets blowback once again from the academic community about it.
Mm-hmm.
But people are interested by it. People read it.
Yeah.
And one specific guy reads it. Who's, I don't know, I can't remember what the character's name is. But he's essentially a film producer. And he wants to make a TV movie about this experiment called The Tenth Level.
The Tenth Level.
Yes. And Stuart, who's the movie star?
William Shatner.
Yes. So this is the biggest problem I have with this movie.
Yeah.
He's not doing a good William Shatner.
No,
he's Kellan not. Lutz is a fucking terrible Shatner.
He's doing a
disaster.
You wouldn't even know it's William Shatner had they not said it in the movie.
Yes. And like how the movie, sir, you're looking up the 10th level right now.
Yeah.
Don't. Look at me. Don't look at the 10th level.
Okay.
I have some things I want to talk
okay,
about.
Okay. I moved it away.
Yeah. Okay. So, so the 10th level, and how he's like trying to have the movie be much more representative of how his experiment actually went than kind of the sensationalized thing they turned into, where he becomes the villain of the movie.
Yeah.
And he's, you know, he accepts the money, and Winona like yells at him about how he's like selling out his life's work.
Yeah.
And he's like, "Do you want me to give the money back?" It's the one time he kind of loses his cool in the movie.
And it's a little bit.
Yeah. But he goes to the set and just kind of watches them play the scene and kind of bastardize his life. And Shatner's playing him. And Shatner and the other actor, Ossie Davis, kind of question him about what, like, why did you do this? Isn't this kind of messed up? I wouldn't do that. Doesn't Shatner say basically, like, I wouldn't do that. William Shatner wouldn't do that.
Mm-hmm.
Shatner.
That's part of the funny thing about the Stanford prison experiment movie, because that also delves in the whole thing of like, oh, well, we're going to try to, because the movie portrays it as like the experiment starts with the precipice of how quickly will power go to your heads and how much they try to not do it that way. But all it took was one very alpha male guard to really kind of push it across. This is the movie's perspective, not the actual like experiments. To the point where they're like making them like walk on all fours and say a chant in the prison.
Yeah.
Like they're like really like dehumanizing them. And then the experimenter just walks out in the middle of the room and it's like, guys,
T.O.
we're done.
Yeah.
That's it. Experiment's over. And they can't the whole thing.
Yeah.
And so I think like the obedience experiment, I think, because the timing of it, what I think was the most important aspect of it.
Wait, are you moving past the 10th level?
Yeah.
I still have something else I got to say about the
10th level. What do you got to say about the 10th level?
Sir, do you know who else was in the 10th level?
No.
The 10th level was one of the first screen appearances where John Travolta plays an uncredited role as a student.
Are you fucking kidding me?
It's true. And Stuart?
What? Why did we not cover this?
It's a movie.
Why did we not cover this? Because
he's uncredited. We missed it. Stuart, there's a Travolta movie we never covered.
Oh my God.
And it's based on Experimenter.
Oh, wow. 6 degrees of separation, bitch.
And I do question. Must we go back?
And cover the 10th level?
Should we do a 10th level episode? This is the question I have to ask right now.
It's 1976. Was it before all of Travolta's? When was Travolta's first movie?
He had already been in
Devil's Reign.
He'd already been into The Devil's Reign, and he'd already been in.
Right, he's not even credited on IMDb.
This is the same year as Carrie.
I don't even see him credited as on IMDb.
That's why I didn't clock it. Probably.
Wow.
It's true.
We failed.
We did fail. We will discuss this.
Oh my God.
Folks, there might be a 10th level episode coming in the near future.
Oh, brother, this guy
Stuart
stinks.
And I might have to go back
and to 1976.
And talk about John Travolta's second screen appearance after The Devil's Reign.
But like, how quick is it gonna be?
Probably very short.
Probably very, very short.
But like, it is a movie that he was in, right?
I'm looking at all the stills.
We did cover Child of Darkness, Child of Light.
We did, so yeah. It only makes sense.
Yeah, we'll talk about it, but it might have to happen. And it's very funny that it's based on Experimenter.
Where
Stanley
can
Booker.
You watch it?
I'm sure it is on YouTube. I am certain it's probably on YouTube.
Catch me going to YouTube right
now. I typed the 10th level movie. Yeah, William Shatner, 1976, The 10th Level, available on YouTube to watch right now for free. You just have to watch a Domino's Pizza ad before it. But we'll loop back around to that. Say, you got it up?
Yeah, I got it up.
I don't want to do this thing. But it's a job. The professor says so. It's a job.
Oh my God.
Yeah, it seems like a real hoot and a half, right?
It's like a real like torture experiment. Oh my God.
But yeah, his reputation kind of shot at this point. Milgram basically continues to like bum around New York and like do experiments where he can, but he kind of just settles into obscurity and sadness. He says like they bring the experiments back up in 1984 and he gives lectures on obedience in relation to the book 1984.
Mm-hmm.
And people like essentially following authority blindly.
Yeah.
But he never is able to like move past just being the guy who did this experiment and lecturing on it. And then while walking around New York one day, he has a heart attack and dies.
Yeah.
And like this whole section of the movie is kind of like the weakest part.
Yeah.
Even though like Peter Sarsgaard's still killing it and he's having fun with like all the cutaways where he's explaining this all to you, which is much more engaging than me explaining it, I assure you, listener at home.
I was going to say, like, it's because he like breaks the fourth wall, looks in the camera, is like, and then I died.
Yes. That's basically what. And then we see him like slump over in a chair at a hospital. And when I was like, no, Stanley,
what a story, Mark.
Stanley, no, Stanley. But he dies and then he talks about his life.
Yeah.
And basically how his wife, Winona, Sasha, continued to live on for many more years. And then it like cuts to her in real life doing the street corner experiment where they look at the sky and see how many people join. Winona, I apologize. Winona doing it and then the real life Sasha doing it. And that cuts back to Winona and then cuts to black, the end credits. Right. That's basically the movie, right?
That's the movie.
Yeah. Yeah, let's fucking go.
I just got to get the energy back up.
that's Experimenter.
Yep.
A much more engaging movie to watch than to explain and to talk about.
I was going
to
say, like, us talking about it, it does feel very much like...
It does not do its service.
Yeah.
It is a good movie. I'd highly recommend watching it. It comes out and gets very good reception.
It does.
It has an 85% Rotten Tomatoes and 81 on Metacritic.
Wow.
Which is universal acclaim.
Wow.
The Rotten Tomatoes consensus is led by a gripping performance by Peter Sarsgaard. Experimenter uses a fact-based story to pose thought-provoking questions about human nature. It's quite a lovely little movie. I liked it a lot. Would highly recommend watching it. It doesn't really make much of it. It premieres at Sundance in 2015 and then gets a wide release in October, but only makes $220,000.
Damn.
Like, it definitely doesn't make its budget back, even though I don't know what its budget is. But I do feel like people, very rarely do you hear people talk about this, but the people who I have spoken about have mentioned this movie, been like, oh yeah, that's a good thing, right? It just doesn't, especially for Winona, it doesn't do anything.
Yeah,
it's another one of those like good movies that just gets lost in the shuffle.
Opening weekend, $8,000.
That's tough. It's probably a limited release in like one theater in New York, but still. Yeah.
Good Lord Almighty, though.
Yeah, it's tough.
Yeah, I mean, it's going to be one of those movies where it's like, unless, you know, you actively look for it, you're never going to hear about it.
Yes.
It's very much like, and I guess that maybe that's the joy of our podcast.
It was, we have to look for these things.
We have to look for these things.
And we find like, occasionally you find the diamond in the rough, like a really nice movie, like
the 10th level. Yeah.
The 10th level, which was, God.
That really struck you in the middle of this episode, didn't it? You're just like, oh, fuck.
Yeah, we might have to do it, right?
We might have to do it.
I learned about this morning, and I was waiting to bring it up.
What were you talking about, Mr. Freeze?
I was thinking about Mr. Freeze this morning a lot.
Was that for this movie?
No, I was just thinking about him. Look, this is a weird weekend where the Joker sequel came out, and there's a Penguin TV show, and I don't know why. I was just like, Mr. Freeze. Good guy. He deserves a shot, right? I'd give Mr. Freeze a shot, right?
Yeah.
Because like when it comes to Mr. Freeze, the only iteration that's gone in a movie has been the dinosaur of the Ice Age. Where he's shooting
and
like,
it's fucking perfect.
He's great.
What's your problem with that?
Arnie is good in that movie. Very funny.
There's no issue with that performance.
Here's the thing, though.
What?
Mr. Freeze is kind of like a tragic love story, and don't you kind of want to see like a tender like Mr. Freeze adaptation? I really do.
Isn't it Dr. Freeze?
No, it's Mr. Freeze.
He doesn't have a PhD.
Get your shit together. It's Mr. Freeze.
I don't know.
Mr.
I try
Freeze.
To be respectful of people.
Because his name is Victor Freeze.
So he didn't make up the Freeze part.
No, his name is F-R-I-E-S, and he's German, so it's Freeze.
So he really just went thematic with that
yes.
shit and made him an Iceman.
Yeah.
Imagine Mr. Freeze, Arnold Schwarzenegger, with a Michael Shannon Iceman.
Apparently the, that would be good though.
What?
I'd watch the shit out of that.
What were you about to say there?
Apparently the new Joker movie, like Harvey Dent is in it as like the district attorney, putting him on trial. And I saw a tweet where someone's like, the whole movie, you're just waiting for them to just do like, all right, our district attorney, Harvey Dent, let's bring in the judge, Mr. Freeze. It's like more fucking villains coming in and out. But I've just been thinking that we should make a nice Mr. Freeze movie.
Wow, this is a disaster.
This is a disaster. One of our best episodes yesterday. Let's wrap it up.
Let's wrap it up.
Final thing I want to say about the post-text, not of this movie, but of the experiment itself, is it is directly what inspires the opening of Ghostbusters.
Oh.
Where Peter Venkman is doing the electric shock tests.
Interesting.
On the guy.
Oh, did not know that.
And yeah. So Stanley Milgram inspired that.
If we were in that experiment and I was the one getting shocked, would you go all the way?
Oh yeah, I'd shock you so fucking hard. I'd shock you to the end of it. I get to 450 and I'd be like, can you go tie? Can you go higher? We got an 870.
You were so quick to answer that. I'd be like, no, I don't wanna shock him.
And I'd be like, fog him up. Light him up. Light him up like the 4th of July. But I think that's it for Experimenter. Good movie. Check it out. Watch it. It's available on Amazon Prime. It's free.
Yes. It is free on Amazon Prime. Yeah.
But now that talking about Experimenter, next week you guys have something else to look forward to.
Yes.
Because next week we will be doing a retrospective that was promised this week and is now actually coming next week.
Yes.
We'll be recapping this era of Winona's career from The Heart is Deceitful Above All Things through to Experimenter. Just kind of this period of her career where she has to fully rebuild herself after her arrest in the early 2000s, going through to this movie, which I think is kind of just like, it's nice to see her in a real thing that looks nice with intention behind the camera.
Yeah.
And Turks and Caicos, which is a movie where she's actually asked by an esteemed director to be a part of that. So this is kind of a nice little cap off to this era, I feel like. A good movie, sturdy movie. What was that?
I didn't know you had your leg on that chair.
Yeah, that was weird.
Shall we?
Anyway, be sure to tune next week for that retrospective era called The Rebuild. And then in the meantime, please remember to rate, review, and subscribe whatever platform you're listening on. It's available on Spotify, Box, Google Podcasts, YouTube, Amazon Music, anywhere you listen to a podcast. Probably there. At Roll Team Pod, Twitter, Instagram, Blue Sky Threads, at Jeff W. Sweeney on Twitter for me. Special thanks, as always, to Beck for the graphic design, Michael Van Bodegem Smith for the theme music that's now taking you out. Have a great week, folks.
Lowe's knows that saving is always top of mind, especially this season. That's why we've picked some great deals for early Black Friday. Get free select DeWalt, Kobalt, or Craftsman tools when you buy a select battery or combo kit. More tools? Why not? Plus, we've got select pre-lit artificial Christmas trees starting at $59.98 because it's never too early to think Christmas. Get Black Friday prices without the crowds. Lowe's, we help you save. While supplies last, selection varies by location.